Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, H.J. Heinz Company, makers of the famous 57 varieties, gives you information, please. A quartet of experts is on hand to answer your questions. Send them to Information Please at 570 Lexington Avenue, New York 22, New York. We may edit them a bit, and in case of similarity, you'll have to accept our judgment of who shall be paid. If we use your question, you will get $10 in war stamps, plus a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If we muff the question, you get $57 in war bonds and stamps, plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. All questions remain our property. Information Please is presented under the supervision of Dan Golenpohl. And now, our master of ceremonies, Clifton Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, free and easy as an April breeze, Information Please continues, offering tonight as its panel of experts John Kieran of the New York Sun and his sidekick Franklin P. Adams, together with our old friend, the news commentator, Mr. Leon Henderson, and the poet and lecturer, Miss Jan Struther. But before we begin, I'd like to read a special bulletin that's just come in, a bulletin we all will be glad to hear, I think. It runs as follows. Philip Murray, president of the CIO United Steelworkers of America, has just announced that the steel strike has been called off. Mr. Murray says thousands of steelworkers will be back at their vital war jobs tomorrow. Well, that should start us off in a cheerful mood. For this first question from Bernard Levin in New York City. Mr. Brother and gentlemen, can you get 2 out of 3 on this? What is the meaning and derivation of each of these words? The first word is namby-pamby. What's it come from? We all know what namby-pamby means. It's an odd phrase. Any idea, any guess as to its origin? Mr. Adams, you're awfully good at this sort of thing, guessing wildly.
I don't know. It's onomatopoetic, whatever it is.
Well, it is sort of. It means, of course, what, Mr. Adams, when you say someone is namby-pamby?
La-di-da.
You're going to ask me what la-di-da comes from now, I suppose. Yes, affectedly pretty, sentimental. It comes from the name of an 18th-century poet who wrote in that style. His name was Ambrose Phillips. They called him Amby, and from Amby, namby-pamby. It doesn't take more than a couple of hundred years to get to namby-pamby from Ambrose Phillips. Well, that's one wrong. How about willy-nilly, a phrase we all use, Miss Struther?
That's from will-he-nil-he, from an old verb, to nil, I suppose.
Meaning what?
To not will.
Yes,
to not
will,
want to.
Whether you will it or not. Miss Kieran?
Well, I think it goes back a little further to the Latin, which is nolens volens.
I think it does, too. But in between, there was that step of willy-nilly, or will-he-nilly, or will-I-nil-I, in probably maybe Elizabethan expression, perhaps. Hocus-pocus comes from Miss Struther?
I think there was a sort of phony magician called Dr. Hocus.
H-Pocus?
I think they just tacked that bit on. I think his name was Dr. Hocus.
You think his name was really Dr. Hocus?
Yeah.
You think that's right, Mr.
My
Adams?
Story.
No, I don't.
How long are you going to stick to that story, Miss Struther?
All night.
Well, it is imitation Latin. It was probably invented by jugglers or tricksters of the Middle Ages to give the effect of a Latin charm. But does it mean anything, really?
No,
it just confuses the audience.
Yes, it confuses sometimes our experts.
It's a hocus pocus. No, hicus hocus.
Oh, you think it does have a real Latin meaning? Well, you may be right, Mr. Adams, but I think I'll have to call that wrong until we are sure of it. And that sends $57 in war bonds and stamps to Mr. Levin instead of the encyclopedia. And now how about trying this for Mrs. Wade H. Poston, Jr. of Cranford, New Jersey. We're going to play you some songs, 3 of them. Now, in the lyrics of each song, there is another familiar song mentioned as part of a lyric. You have to sing the other song. Is this perfectly unclear, Mr. Henderson? You get it? All you have to do is follow the lyric. Now let's have the first.
We down upon the swan, far away.
have two more parts to this question? What'll you take not to sing all of it, Mr. Harris? Well, that's
part of Laura, I'll say.
That's beautifully done, as a matter of fact. Don't let me kid you. Now let's have the second one. About it, folks.
London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down.
London Bridge is falling down, my fair lady.
That's right. Very good. There's another song embedded in that. It's Ring a Rosie or something like that. Some little child. No, I don't think O'Grady is in it. But
boys
London Bridge.
Rosie O'Grady. London Bridge is falling down.
Oh, you're switching to another song.
No.
We can go on like this.
No, not while I'm here, Miss Brewer. Now the third and last. Your voices ring out loud and clear.
Sweet Adeline,
my Adeline,
my Adeline,
Adeline, dear heart,
Adeline, dear heart,
for you I pine,
for you I pine,
I dream,
all my dream, your fair face be,
your
I am, my heart, sweet Adeline.
Henderson, do you suppose there's any chance your sponsor was listening in on that?
I'm warming up to sing on Christmas night.
Well, you haven't yet. Well, that's very good, Mr. Other and Gentlemen. That's 3 out of 3 and a perfect score. And a beautiful rendition, I thought. How about this one from Mrs. Harold Ramser of Bel Air, California? What actually is each of the following, and why is it so called? Get 2 out of 3. Adam's apple. What is it? Why do we call it that? Adam's apple? Miss Struther.
It's,
They can't see that, Miss Struther.
I know.
Television,
lump in the throat.
A permanent or
permanent. It's a sore.
Yes, in whose throat?
Men's throat.
In men's throat, yes. And why is it so called? Mr. Adams?
Because it's supposed to be the apple that Adam swallowed because Eve asked him to.
Did he swallow it?
No, it's stuck.
It's stuck in his throat, and it's still there, I believe, Mr. Adams, isn't it?
That's right, but
anybody
Adam,
know you shouldn't.
Apostrophe S.
Why clear yourself? Yes, most men have that little protuberance, except the handsomer ones, Miss Struther, who have swan-like throats like yours. And how about the Achilles tendon? What is the Achilles tendon, Mr. Kieran?
Well, the Achilles tendon is one of the lower tendons in the leg that attaches, I believe, the larger leg bone with the large bone in the heel. And it's so called because that was the tendon that was supposed to have been cut on the foot of Achilles, which led to his ultimate death.
Yes, that's right. It was his only vulnerable spot. Why was that?
Because his mother dipped him in the sticks to make him invulnerable, but she held him by the heel, and that part was kept above water, and therefore it was vulnerable.
Yes. Mr. Henderson, were you going to tell us pretty much the same story?
Yes, that was my story.
All right. Kieran will stick to it. How about the Widow's Peak? Why? What is a Widow's Peak, and why do we call it that? Widow's Peak?
You have one.
I beg your pardon?
I said you have one. It's that very beautiful formation.
I had no idea the coupe was discoverable. What is it exactly?
Well, it's the way of the hair growing on the brow, which coming down to a point in the middle or going back from the middle of the side,
whatever
way you like to put it. I like it very much.
Thank you.
Supposed to be a great beauty, and I think it's called the Widow's Peak because it looks like a widow's little bonnet thing that widows used to wear.
Well, I don't know whether that's the origin of it or not. Mr. Adams, do you have an alternative origin? You don't know very much about widows.
I don't know no widows.
Well, it's supposed to be an omen of early widowhood. That is, if a woman has that sort of hair formation, it's supposed to mean that she's going to be a widow.
Fairly soon.
I doubt that it's true. I doubt it very much. How about this from Norman Miller of Shrub Oak, New York? Quote, let's say three lines of poetry or song that might indicate what part of a turkey you like. This is a very seasonable question. Pick a part of the turkey and give us a line of poetry or song, Mr. Kieran.
On some fond breast the parting soul relies.
That's a beautiful one.
Gray's Elegy.
Very good. Mr. Henderson.
My heart at thy sweet voice.
Yes, the heart, sure. Mr. Adams, whether or not you've ever associated with widows,
I was
going to
say, as pants the heart, but that's no good. If he had that.
They don't have any pants. Turkeys don't have pants.
Mr. their hearts.
Mr. Kieran?
Take the wings of morning and the bark and desert. It's from Thanatopsis.
It's beautiful. All we have to do is say turkey to you, and you rise to the most sublime heights of poet. Can you think of another just for fun? That gives us three. How about something with the wings or a wing in it?
Gave you a wing.
Had I the wings of a dove?
Oh, yes. And how about...
I had the wings of an angel.
None of that now. How about the neck, Mr. Henderson? Can you think of a song with... Yes?
There used to be a song in the last war that ended up, execute the chicken wheel and fall upon your neck.
Don't know that at all.
Sounds very good.
Mr. Adams?
Turkey in the straw.
The whole turkey?
That's the whole turkey.
Good, yes. That wraps it up and sends it home.
The last straw.
Very good. The last straw. Try this one from Mrs. Harry Bortz of Chicago. This, again, is a musical question. What news event of the past week is suggested by each of these songs that are going to be played? Let's get two out of three. Let's have the first. Mr. Henderson.
The railroad strike.
Yes, the threatened railroad strike. Well, what was being played?
I've been working on the railroad.
Very good, Mr. Henderson. Now, how about the next one, Mr. Kahn? Mr. Adams?
That is about some admiral, the monarch of the seas.
That's right. Now, what news event does the song suggest to you, Mr. Adams?
Well... One monarch of the seas was sunk yesterday.
You bet. What one was it?
Begins with S.
It does. You needn't be modest, Mr.
Scharnhorst.
The Scharnhorst, yes. The big German ship that was sunk. What was the name of the admiral in command of the British Home Fleet, Mr. Kieran?
Fraser,
yes. Admiral Sir Bruce Fraser, who I guess can claim the title of monarch of the sea now. And now the third and last... Perhaps that isn't quite so easy. Does the song, Mr. Henderson, you seem to know a great deal about
song. Another frame, but I can't place it. It's a hymn.
I don't think it is a hymn. I cannot sing the old songs is the name of the song that was being played. Now, what current event would that suggest to you? I cannot sing the old songs. An event, Mr. Kieran?
Russia has changed from the international to a national hymn.
Yes, that's very well put. It's got a new national anthem, replacing the old international. Well, that gives us two out of three. Now, here's a question key to the season. It seems there's a certain food which plays an important role in the New Year's celebration of our courageous allies, the Chinese. Ben Grauer, our Heinz reporter, should have some ideas on the subject. I'm sure you do, Ben.
Well, I believe you're referring to the tangerine, which the Chinese consider an appropriate gift of the year because its bright color is said to ward off evil spirits, to bring luck and good health. Well, we say the thing differently. We talk about vitamins, minerals, and such. But we still believe more than ever in those same ideas about the good health and accompanying good luck that comes to us through eating certain foods. I'm thinking of the tomato, for instance, and especially of those plump, vine-ripened tomatoes used in the Heinz recipe for cream of tomato soup. I wish you could see these big, beautiful tomatoes growing on the vine. Each one is perfect, without a blemish. And beautiful how the fresh flavor of the tomatoes blends with the smooth richness of heavy cream. And there's always just the right amount of spicing in Heinz cream of tomato soup. Never a speck too much or too little. I tell you, any man's in luck when he finds a fragrant, steaming bowl of Heinz cream of tomato soup on the table. Have some tomorrow.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. And now let's go on with this question from M. Ackerman in New York City. Who accomplished each of these feats? I think we ought to get all on this. Hoop the court. Mr. Kieran?
Alexander the Great.
Alexander the Great. Who snatched the girdle from the Amazon Queen? Snatched the girdle from the... Mr. Kieran?
Hercules.
Yes, it was a case of boy meeting girdle there. Who got away...
Oh!
Who got away with the Gorgon's head? Who got away with the Gorgon's head? Miss Brother?
Perseus.
Perseus is right. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. Try this one from Miss Rose Lease of New York. By gollies, Mr. Henderson, here's another chance for you. We're going to ask you to sing a song. It's an interesting question that might suggest an issue or a deal in which these pairs of people were involved. I'll give you an example to make it a little easier. For example, suppose I named Sam Houston, the American hero, and Santa Anna, the Mexican general. They were involved in what, Mr. Kieran?
Well, the eyes of Texas are upon you.
That would be a good one. That's deep in the heart of Texas, any song involving Texas. Now, is the idea of the question clear? All right, the first is Bryan and McKinley, somehow involved in something. Mr. Kieran.
Silver threads among the gold that shine on
my brow today. Life is fading fast away.
That's a little too much for me, gentlemen. Very sweet, but very sad. Yes, silver threads among the gold. Why, Mr. Kieran, you were about
16
to...
16 to 1, the ratio... Free silver.
Well, who was for what?
Bryan was a free silver man.
I'll not press down the crown of gold.
Upon
the brow of labor.
Yes. Very good. How about this pair, Jefferson and Napoleon? What song might be suggested that they were both involved in? Mr. Kieran?
Anything from Louisiana Purchase.
Quite right. Is there a song, Mr. Strother?
Louisiana Hayride.
Louisiana Hayride would be said.
Louisiana, for the Louisiana singing, Polly Wally Doodle all the day.
That's a good one. Very good. Yes. What are we referring to when you speak of the Louisiana Purchase, Mr. Kieran?
That vast tract of land which began in what we now know as Louisiana and ran way up into our northwest for about $15 million.
Something like that. When was this purchased?
That would have been in about 1805.
Three. I think it was three.
Three?
I think Mr. Adams is right. I think it was three. I'm not sure. Maybe it took 2 years to make
that's
the purchase.
That's right. That's right.
How about Taft and Theodore Roosevelt? Can you sing a song that would be suggested by some Mr. Kieran?
I don't want to play in your yard.
Hey, that's very good. Very good. How do you explain that?
I don't love you anymore. Well, I had a little falling out at the end.
Yes?
Well, Mr. Taft ran for re-election.
Yes.
On the Republican ticket in 1912.
Yeah.
Mr. Colonel Roosevelt, wanted to run himself, and when he didn't get the Republican nomination... He got up a Bull Moose party and wrote the Bull Moose as far as it...
But not out of three, Mr. Adams.
The song is We Never Speak as We Pass By.
That would be very good. We Never Speak as We Pass By. Yes, that's true. Were they, by the way, at outs for some time after that 1912 election, Mr. Adams?
I think they were, but they shook hands and they were at a dinner once. And George Kaufman said that they agreed at that dinner that the chicken hash was good.
Try this one, Miss Brother and Gentlemen, from Ernest Elgard of New York City. Who are these men who were good advisors in fields in which they never excelled in practice? They were excellent in theory, but not so good in practice. Now, the first one wrote a book on education, but his children landed in an orphanage. Which one was that? Mr. Kieran.
Rousseau.
Jean-Jacques.
He chucked all his children into an orphanage as fast as they popped up.
Sounds as if it were a life work, the way you put it, Mr. Kieran. What was the name of the book, Mr. Kieran, that he wrote on children?
Emile.
Is it any good? Does it help you to bring up kids?
Pretty dry.
Pretty dry. How about one who is a good manager, but never made the majors? Mr. Kieran?
Joseph Vincent McCarthy of the New York Yankees and Buffalo, New York.
Quite right, yes. And how about one who wrote a famous political guidebook, but himself failed in practical politics? Mr. Kieran, once more.
Machiavelli.
Machiavelli. Who was Machiavelli?
Well, he was an advisor to one of the Italian monarchs, and he wrote this book called The Prince for the guidance of his royal patron. And he didn't do very well himself.
He didn't do very well himself as a diplomat. That's quite true. 3 out of 3, Mr. Kieran. How about this one from Archie Napier, Jr. of Windsor, Ontario, Canada? How about 3 literary titles that mention some kind of community? City, town, village, anything like that. Mrs. Stoller?
Our Town.
Our Town, who wrote it?
Thornton Wilder.
Thornton Wilder. Beautiful play by Thornton Wilder.
Towns, the City.
Who wrote that?
Clyde Fitch.
A play. Some time ago. I'm sure that's true. Mr. Henderson?
Tale of Two Cities.
Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens. Yes, that gives us a city and a town. Miss Trevor?
The Deserted Village by Goldsmith.
That is right. Mr. Kieran?
The Eternal City.
You've got too many cities, Miss Trevor.
Oh, Hamlet by William Shakespeare.
Hamlet by William Shakespeare.
Oh, very good.
Now let's hear from our Heinz reporter, Ben Grauer. Tonight, Ben's not going to talk to us about Heinz Good Food. Instead, he brings an important message to women who have training or experience as dietitians.
Sick and wounded soldiers and army hospitals need the most nourishing food that we can get them. For this reason, the U.S. Army is issuing a hurry call, an urgent call, for 1,000 dietitians to be attached to hospitals here and overseas. If you have training or experience as a dietitian, this is your opportunity to serve your country. Women under 45 are eligible. The basic qualification is a college major in nutritional management or food and nutrition. Depending on your experience, you will be commissioned a second lieutenant immediately or enrolled as student dietitian or an apprentice dietitian. Now that more and more Americans are facing enemy fire and being wounded in action, the need for dietitians has become more pressing than ever before. Can you imagine a greater service than helping these wounded boys on the road back to health? Don't delay. Write directly to the Surgeon General, U.S. Army, Washington, D.C., for complete information.
Thank you, Ben Grauer. And I'll try this one from Catherine Dutcher of Washington, Connecticut. This is a very interesting question, I think. You remember that President Roosevelt addressed us on December 24th. He addressed the whole world at 3 p.m. Eastern Wartime on December 24th. And at that time, the president remarked upon the difference in time for many of his listeners who were scattered around the world. What time of day was it for his listeners, approximately, let's say, in Alaska? It doesn't have to be the day.
Well, it was the same day, and it was about 3 p.m. here would be about 3 p.m. would be about 10 or 11 p.m., depending upon what part of Alaska they were in.
I think that's exactly right, Mr. Kieran. Mrs. Strother?
Oh, yes.
Maybe you know more about Alaska than Mr. Kieran does. I think that's right. About 10 a.m., perhaps 11, as you say. You said a.m. or
p.m.? A.m. Oh, a.m.
A.m.
Excuse me. I didn't mean p.m.
A.m. is correct. How about the difference in time for a listener in China? This is tricky. When would that be? Mr. Henderson?
It'd be Christmas day.
That's quite right.
It ought to be,
I'll take Christmas Day as an answer, but would you like to make it a little more specific?
2 or 3 o'clock in the morning.
That would be about 4 a.m., I guess, again, depending upon what part of China you were listening in. It's a continent, in effect. Very good. Would be Christmas Day. Now, what time of day? Our own boys in Italy, perhaps, who are listening. Mr. Kieran?
That'd be about 9 or 10 p.m. in Italy. 9 p.m., say.
Of what day?
Of the same day.
Of the same day, the evening of the 24th. Yes, Miss Strother?
I said it would be about 11 p.m. I don't know what they do about summertime.
I think it would be 9 p.m. in Italy. Italy is a rather narrow, thin strip of land, so there wouldn't be any difference in time there. That would not be a stretch of more than an hour. But that gives us 3 out of 3 and passes us on to a question from Verna Brooks of Rochester, New York. Quote a line of poetry or song in which these words occur. The first word is dreary, the second is weary, the third is sleary. How about dreary? Line of poetry or song, Miss Strother?
All the world am dark and dreary.
Yes, it's from?
Swanee River.
Old folks at home,
old folks, I guess.
Yeah. Mr. Karen?
Once upon a midnight dreary, as I pondered weak and weary, or simple
yes,
and so
that
on.
Gives you both beer
you
and
Larry?
I'll take Mr. Henderson.
Just a wearying for you.
Oh, that's a nice touch, Mr. Henderson.
This Leary, I'll leave the...
you give Leary to Mr. Kieran?
The vengeful Bobkin sits, waiting for the Leary children to develop Leary fits. That's from a poem by Kipling.
It is. And what is the
poem? Well, fellow Leary became engaged to Mrs. Bobkin's daughter merely for the purpose of getting a job in the Indian Civil Service. And when he got the job and was nicely settled in it, he developed these fits by the aid of pear shaving soap. And thus he was cast off and married his own girl whom he brought out from England.
Yes, that's right. And year by year...
The vengeful Mrs. Bobkin sits waiting for the Leary children to develop Leary fits.
That's a perfect answer. I don't see why we all didn't know that, Mr. Adams. That gives us dreary, weary, and sleary in Washington, D.C. Can you identify these people who engaged in the same general field of activity, though not necessarily as exact contemporaries? I'm going to give you three pairs of people. Now, the first pair is Lamb and Kid. Lamb and Kid.
How do you spell that kid?
I don't think I'm going to tell you.
All right, pirates.
Pardon?
Pirates.
Well, they were engaged in the same field. Was Lamb a pirate?
Well, I know Kid was. They were sea rovers.
Kid was a pirate. Well, who was Lamb?
Well, he may have been the fellow who went out and chased him and caught him and hanged him.
You're just making that up on the spur of the
moment. Well, I know who Kid was. And
Kid, K-I-D-D, certainly was a pirate. Lamb was an author. What century?
He was 1700 and, along in the middle of the 1700s.
Charles Lamb?
Charles Lamb.
Rather later than that, I think. What did you say, Miss Strother?
I would have said he was around about 1800.
Yes, rather early in the 19th century. And who was Thomas Kidd, Miss Strother?
Thomas Kidd.
Mr. Kieran?
Playwright.
Lamb and writers, a 16th century playwright. Just have to call that wrong, Mr. Kieran. Now, how about this pair?
Lamb.
I still
don't think that you would call him over 1800. He wrote before that, I think.
He wrote before that, but also after. Now, how about Black and White? Here's a pair, Black and White. Mr. Kieran?
Sounds like whiskey to me.
Mr. Henderson?
Supreme Court Justices.
Both Supreme Court Justices. And Fast and Loose, Fast and Loose? Mr. Adams?
Authors.
Authors, who are they?
Howard Fast and Claire Booth, my representative.
Right. Well, that's all we have time for. Thank you, Miss Strother and Mr. Henderson, for adding to the fun this evening. Tonight, H.J. Hines Company has paid out $57 in war bonds and stamps, and one says the encyclopedia. Next week, along with our regular trio, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Adams, and Mr. Levant, we present as our guest the distinguished novelist, who doubles with equal effectiveness as an Ohio farmer, Mr. Louis Bromfield. Remember, send your questions and the correct information 5...